Tonight's lesson's about a spoiled brat, a picnic, and an unexpected journey. And as I said, it kind of picks up where we left off a couple of weeks ago on Sunday morning, last two sections on God's path, introduced us to the 12 sons of Jacob. We've been working our way from creation towards the finality of God's plan and seeing Christ come to earth and then working through the church. And eternity. And so we've reached the point where part of the promises that God has made to Abraham have been fulfilled. They've been to Canaan. The land has been promised to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, the descendants. And the family's begun to grow. And so that's kind of where we pick up. There are a couple of things I want you to note about Jacob's line. First, I want you to note that even though Reuben is the oldest, the birthright, the blessings, those things are passed on to Joseph's children. One of the stories that we'll look at in a couple of weeks, as well as 1 Chronicles 5 and verse 1 references that. Notice also that Reuben's the oldest. Jesus does not come through that line. Joseph is the blessed one. He does not come through that line. He comes through the line of Judah. Third, Joseph makes up approximately the last third of Genesis. And that's important because it's going to get us to Egypt. It's going to get the nation, God's people established as a nation, and lead to those stories that we know so well about Moses and the Exodus and the coming of the law. So let's look at the first major event in Joseph's life. Joseph is a child. He's growing up in Canaan, 17 years old. He has a problem with tattling on his brothers. He'll go into the field to check on them for daddy, come back home, and not give the best report. Whatever it is that they're doing that they're not supposed to be doing makes its way back home to Jacob, or by this time he's Israel. The why he has the problem with tattling is recorded in verse 3. He is the favored child. Jacob has continued that line of favoritism that started with Isaac and with Rebekah. And really, we didn't talk about it a lot, but it really started with Abraham and Sarah. Remember, Sarah has Hagar and Ishmael thrown out because Ishmael's making fun of Isaac, because Ishmael might get a part of the inheritance. And so this line of favoritism has continued. And Joseph's next in line for it. He is petted by his father. He is the favorite. He's described as the son of his old age. What that does not mean is that he's the youngest. Okay, Benjamin's the youngest. Benjamin's the one who's born as Jacob's favorite wife passes away. And so what it must mean is that Joseph is the one who is there at his father's right hand in his old age. He's the one taking care of him. Maybe if he's 17, Benjamin's not quite old enough maybe to fill that role. And so they're close. They're really, really close. And Jacob pets him. Jacob listens to him when he tattles. Jacob sets him apart from his brothers. Gives him a varicolored or a multicolored robe or tunic in a world where because of money, you're limited to whatever color the sheep are that you're using to make your wool. Jacob goes out of his way to provide Joseph with a coat that stands out. The extra love and effort put into it. That setting him apart, that petting him, leads to animosity. It leads to the fact that Joseph's brothers despise him. They hate him. They cannot be civil to him. It encourages the tattling. It encourages the favoritism. And those things, as they're being encouraged by their father, leads to the split between the brothers, which in turn leads to more of it. If your brothers are being mean to you and your brothers are being ugly, you tattle on them more and father pets you more because you're the special one. And so they end up in this vicious cycle that reaches the point of open hostility. It says that they could not speak to Joseph in a civil manner. There was just nothing left between them that was any good. To make matters worse, not only does he tattle, Joseph has a problem keeping his mouth shut. God blesses him with some dreams. And those dreams involve his brothers. Those dreams involve his mother and his father. Those dreams involve him being bowed to. He's out collecting the wheat. They're harvesting. His brother's sheaves of wheat are bowing to his sheaf. The sun and moon and stars are gathering around him and they're bowing to him. Walk up, if you're already in not the best relationship with your brothers, walk up to them and say, by the way, I may be the next to the youngest. I may only be 17, but you're going to bow to me. See how that flies. In fact, Lynn stopped me at the back door after the lesson on the eldership this morning and said, do you realize that you just told me I have to obey my brother as an elder? Now, it was in joke because her membership's somewhere else, but just try it, you know. Hey, bow down to me, big brother. Mom and daddy. Spider? I look up and Lloyd's going. And Tracy's going. And they had no idea I was looking at him. But a spider had dropped out of the ceiling, and so he was much nicer than me, because I go, die. But try that, you know. They don't like you already. And all of a sudden, hey, you're going to get to bow to me. Oh, Mom and Dad, you're going to bow to me. It doesn't go well. Jacob says, really? Yeah. But he kind of files it away. And the animosity grows, and the animosity grows. We get to verse 18, and they're ready to kill him. They're willing to plot and plan and go from just every time Joseph walks by punching him in the shoulder and insulting him to, we're going to kill you. And so again, Jacob sends Joseph on the tattle trip. Go out in the field, find your brothers, come back and tell me what they're doing. He tracks them down. Finally, after going from Shechem to Dothan, he finds them. And they see him coming. Here comes the dreamer. Here comes the pet. Here comes the boy with the coat of many colors. Here comes the spoiled brat. I've got a plan. Let's kill him. And so they throw him in a pit to hold him. With this in mind, we're going to kill him. We're going to leave him in the pit when we kill him. We're going to go home and we'll just tell Daddy that a wild animal got him. Well, they carry out the first part of it. They throw him in the pit. Reuben intervenes. Don't kill him. You know, I'm the older brother. I'm responsible for you guys. I'm the one that gets to go back to tell Daddy. Just leave him in the pit. I'll come back and rescue him when you guys aren't looking. Well, before he can rescue him, they've sat down for their picnic. Joseph's in the pit. There's no water in it, so he's safe and secure. Some Ishmaelite traders come by. Ishmaelite, Ishmael, Ishmael, Isaac, the animosity that continues. Hey, I got another plan. We don't have to kill him. We can sell him. And when we sell him, we're going to get money. By the way, this is Judah's plan, the line of Judah and Jesus. And we can get rid of him. We don't get blood on our hands. We're rid of our brother. We get a little jingle in our pockets. Reuben's not around. They agree. 20 shekels of silver. By the way, do you know how much that is? That's 10 shekels of silver less than the price of a common slave. They don't think much of him. It's not about the money. It's about being rid of little brother. You know, brothers and sisters fight all the time. And we threaten to mail them. I had a little one. We threaten to mail them. We beat them up. We threaten to lock them in the closet. We never really get around to selling them to traveling gypsies. These guys do. They return home, shredded coat, covered in blood, give it to their father and let Jacob draw his own conclusions. And Israel's heart is broken. My favorite son's gone. And he mourns. And Joseph lands in Egypt. He lands in the house of Potiphar. He's the captain of Pharaoh's bodyguard. And we're going to pick up there with our next story next week the week after that, whenever we get to it. And so let's do what we've always done with these stories. First of all, I want to make some New Testament connections for you. Joseph's move to Egypt, caused by a family squabble, caused by favoritism, caused by a whole line of family favoritism, is the beginning of a series of events that God is going to use to preserve Abraham's line. The famine's going to come. They're going to need food. They're going to need protection. They're going to end up in Egypt. It's also God's way of providing them a safe environment that this family can grow and blossom to the point that when they finally leave Egypt, they are a nation. They are a force with which the world must reckon. And so when we see the line of Jesus in the New Testament, and we see a line of kings, and we see a law, this is that series of events that allow us to go from Abraham and in Isaac and in Jacob, these singles in the household, to an explosion. And God can get Jesus here to save us. Here's the application I want to make. These stories are written for our learning. They're not just about moving the story along. I want you to watch the chain of events. Actually, step back to the favoritism shown Isaac and then the favoritism shown Jacob. Well, Jacob marries. The wife that he loves the most is not producing children. Her sister is. He ends up taking two handmaids. He produces children through four different women. Not the best idea for family harmony. Okay, you've divided your house to start off with. You got a bunch of half-brothers who are not going to get along. Then you pick one of them out, just happens to be from your favorite wife. He becomes the favorite son. And you spoil him to the point that he's tattling and he's wearing a coat that makes him stand out from all his brothers. And it leads to hatred. Notice the series of events. Today's choices equal tomorrow's consequences. The decisions that Jacob is making in his life lead to the fact that he's going to lose his son for an extended amount of time. He's going to think he's dead. Now, God's going to use it for good, and we're going to get to that in a couple of weeks. But as of right now, when we leave off in this story, what we see is the negative side of it. The decisions you make today. And it can be the what seems to be the smallest decision in the world or the largest decision. And it can be whether it's how you act when you go to prom, or it can be the way you chose to dress today, or it can be the word you're going to choose to use in the next conversation with a person. But every one of those decisions you make today equals some kind of consequence down the road. And when it's something like the favoritism, or it's the sin, it catches up with you. Galatians 6, verses 7 and 8, do not be deceived, God is not mocked. Whatsoever man sows, that he will also reap. If he sows to the flesh, he will from the flesh reap destruction. So you make your decisions, and the consequences come back to get you. Romans 6 and verse 23, the wages of sin is death. And so if we make that choice, we have to deal with it. We have to live with the consequences. One of the greatest attributes that I ever witnessed, and it was a constant attribute in the life of Roy Sims, was the fact that he never, ever made a split-second, spur-of-the-moment decision. If he had a decision to make, he weighed every angle. He weighed the consequences out, not only for himself, but for his family, for the church, and everybody that that decision might possibly affect. For that reason, very, very rarely did he have to regret a decision and live with negative consequences. He wasn't perfect, by all means. None of us are. We all live with consequences. But if I could encourage you to do anything tonight and learn anything from him and learn anything from this story, stop and think. Stop and think before you do something stupid. And live with it for the rest of your life. Make wise decisions. Live with positive consequences. Make dumb decisions and live with negative consequences. We've been learning that since the dawn of creation. And yet we have so much trouble applying it in our own lives. Maybe that you're living with consequences now that you need help dealing with to get through. We're here for that. It may be that you're not a child of God yet and you're facing the consequence of hell because you've not named Christ Jesus as your Savior. We're here to deal with that. If you need to obey the gospel, if you need to be baptized, do it today. Because tomorrow might be the day you start dealing with that consequence. Because the Lord might come back tonight. Maybe that you've got a decision you need help making. What did we talk about with elders this morning? They're elders because they're wiser. If you need help making a decision, come ask these guys. They'll help you. Anything we can do to help deal with the consequences of this life, let us know as we stand and sing.